Any comments or any thoughts?
I was thinking that I think I have more than one refuge. I think I have different refuges for different situations, because I think probably my longest term refuge has been nature throughout my life. So when I walk in nature, when I find my time in nature, that feels like a kind of a homecoming. And I'm remembering that as a young woman, when I get really frazzled by life and didn't have as good of coping skills, I hope, as I have now, I would go and lay down on the ground. No matter what, I just needed to be on the earth. And then laying there would just give me perspective. And I think that's still true, but then now that I know of Buddhists, if I'm really frightened about something in my life, or there's been a few times in the last bunch of years where I felt physically threatened. One time I felt physically threatened and I started thinking about the Dalai Lama, and I heard Gyoto monks in the back of my mind, and I had this overwhelming sense of having a lot of Buddhists with me, and the fear just dissipated. And so I think I have different refuges depending on the situation.
You might consider the possibility that they're all the same.
In a non-dualistic world?
If it's bringing a feeling of peace, clarity, then whether it's nature, whether it's Dharma, and the ground is nature too. Different refuges, if they're true, if one says I have different refuges, but they're really one that you can relax into, there's only one truth.
So maybe it's the feeling of safety, because with all of those experiences, I have a feeling of like being held and being safe. Now, who the I is that's being safe is another question, but in the moment, it's like it's relaxing. I feel like I don't have to watch my back, you know.
You feel like you're encompassed.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing I find myself continually telling people is don't settle on an idea of something. There's always more. And as we grow and as our awareness expands, our refuge, our experiences, everything deepens. If in any way we think, I've got it, there's no more growing. That's another wall you're going to have to tear down.
Yeah, I thought this was a good exercise to contemplate a refuge also. Sort of like Sue Marie, I actually felt like I had two refuges. So one, and I've been involved in the Dharma for a long time, so Dharma was one for me, but different elements of it. But I also started feeling like the first word that came to mind was wealth, but I'm certainly not wealthy. But at this point in my life, and it wasn't always this way, but at this point in my life, I do have a certain level of financial security. And And sometimes I don't really think about it very much, but in this reflection, it actually did come up. And I don't know that I really want to, I know in terms of Dharma, I wouldn't necessarily call it a refuge, but I will always honor honesty over anything else. So it actually came up, you know, as a feeling of sort of like the safety, perhaps.
But see, what concurrently is there in that feeling of safety is that there's no way to control what's going to happen. The markets could fall.
Right.
So what in any situation other than true refuge, what we're dealing with is fear. That is the underlying. And my goodness, I can sit here and think, oh my heavens, what if a whole different administration comes in and they even do away with Social Security for us who are taking it? What am I going? I mean, I can scare myself.
Yeah.
So how do I deal with that? I don't listen to NPR in the car. I listen to Dharma CDs or something. Because the Tibetans say, if there's something you can do about it, why worry? If there's nothing you can do about it, why worry? So you do what you can and then let it go.
And that's always a good formula to say to other people, when I'm worrying, it's a hard one.
Oh, yeah, it's so easy to get caught. Perhaps if we lived in a country like India, where the emphasis used to be, for the most part, in how you lived, not what you had. And even in those days, I would suspect that the poorer people, the untouchable class, had stronger faith than the ones as you move up who were more the Brahmins or you move up, because they had more to protect. Right. Any comments?
Another thing that was the contemplation of refuge, the opportunity to do that, brought up for me, and it builds a little bit from my hearing Bob, is that for me, nature is huge refuge, huge. And I just went right to a rhododendron and just looked right at the flower right in my face. And then I lay on the ground. And then I stretched a little bit and I thought about, I was moving from refuge to refuge to refuge. And as I was stretching, I thought about how I take refuge in my body. Well, yeah, I do. But of course, my body's gonna be gone. So that came up as a thought and a recognition. And so then I was just, as we were talking about this, him being honest and you responding, I thought, yeah, so refuges, you know, maybe there's some ones that, I mean, false refuges, and then, because I think you said something about false refuges yesterday, and and then sort of temporary refuges. So like, you know, maybe the sense of the ones you had before and the ones, you know. So trying to get at the more essential refuge from contemplating the temporary and the...
I think first we have to clarify for ourselves our aspirations. What are our aspirations in a Dharma sense? And I think from that, the answers to a lot of these questions arise. And aspirations also will deepen. But if we actually have an aspiration, and it's almost like it's a kind of knowing we give ourselves, things start coalescing automatically to bring it about. It isn't a matter of now I have to go out and fulfill the aspiration. Our being, our clear being, starts activating to bring it about. We just have to step out of the way. We think so much of the time that we have to do it. I have to make it happen. But along those same lines, no one is coming from the outside to save us. I can hear Rinpoche saying again and again, Ani, I can't do it for you. The teachers are beacons of light. Because when we're around them, there's a different energetic field. So through them, we know something more is possible. And then it's up to us. All of the teachings are guideposts helping us find ourselves, our true nature.
Sitting in the courtyard.
Smoking.
Friday morning.
Cigarettes.
Good, yeah. cigarettes up to the end. Excellent.
He had his refuge.
Yeah.
Well, when he couldn't hold a cigarette or anything, was Don Williams helped him in his wheelchair, and they wheeled him out to the courtyard, and they lit a cigarette, and they just kind of
wafted it under his nose. Whatever, honor his space. None of us truly know what's right for anybody else. We think we do because something about them aggravates us, annoys us, but we don't know. We are each endowed with the capacity to be responsible for the quality of our experience. However, until consciously impacted with our compassionate awareness, our unintegrated fear, anger, and grief continues to function as the unconscious causal point of our outer disharmony. We radiate it out, and that's what comes back. By continuing to suppress and sedate our unintegrated emotional condition, we continually are provoked by anyone or anything. Only by consciously developing the capacity to feel the present moment are we delivered beyond this predicament. Not feel intellectually, experience. Can refuge truly be found anywhere other than the present moment? No. And when I suspect, and I always say I suspect when it's me talking, that finding refuge in nature is simply because at that moment we are experiencing the nature fully. And so where is that refuge really? In ourselves.
One thing I thought about, can I say
go
this?
Ahead, it's fine.
It just, what you're talking about from the refuge thing is, thinking about this, you know, like the refuge is always the present moment or in ourselves and stuff. Well, when we look at nature too, we're looking at more sentient beings than we can count. And that's in all of them too. It's more difficult for us to perceive, sure, but it's you know, it's supposed to be in all living things. So, in that, I think in that sense, that nature, you know, could be a refuge too, maybe.
Mm-hmm. In a way, nature is a sort of an antidote to egoism, you know,
right.
Self-centeredness. Like,
right.
I'm the only life in this universe,
right.
You know, that matters.
Right, because
it's my theme park. Well, when I drove Paul down to the Redwoods, you know, about 4 weeks ago, I was amazed by the aliveness, the energy when you get in amongst the redwoods. Absolutely amazing. And the thought that they have survived thousands of years. And it, how important am I, really? Anything that happens to us, like going to the redwoods or whatever that makes us see things in a different way, is a massive doorway. And an opportunity. I mean, not ultimately, but what usually happens is we then shift back into our ordinary way of being, where we're at the center and things are happening around us. And I suspect that in a state of awareness, or that the lamas and teachers, what happens for them is they sit back and the movement of life, of the day, of the week, passes in front of them. They're watching the movement, feeling the flow, experiencing the colors and the sounds, but not taking it seriously, not identifying with it. That is freedom.
You know, at the same time, isn't there a serious paradox here about I taking action, you know, me choosing to do something? I mean, one of my observations of my life over many years has been that if it is nothing is really just going to come to my doorstep by myself. If I just sit back in my house, I have to do something to make it happen, whether it's Dharma.
If there's something you can do, you do it.
Okay.
But you do it and let go. You don't stand there fiddling and watching and trying to make it manifest, and you don't personalize. We personalize. Then you're still free to do. But at the same moment, it's still all moving. You aren't interrupting the flow of what's going by you.
Okay. But sometimes you are part of that flow when you take action.
You may influence it, but you can still watch it. If you get caught up in it, you're powerless. Because you're like a log in a river current. Personalizing. We personalize everything.
Well,
for me,
the analogy is more like a boat, like being in a boat. And yeah, the river is carrying me, and I can't really totally fight the river, but I can steer my boat somewhat.
Yeah, but why do you have to go to the middle of the river in the first place?
Well, that's where we are.
Are we?
Yeah.
No, that's where we think we are. You can work more effectively by not getting caught up in the stream.
Yeah.
That reminds me of what you just said about steering the boat through the current. It reminded me of my flight training. I was learning to fly Cessnas, and I had a death grip on the yoke, and my instructor had to teach me not to have such a death grip, because I was convinced that if I let go of the yoke, that the plane would just.
Yeah.
And one day we're flying, and I have my death grip going, and he just like knocks my hand off of it, and the plane was still. And I was able to let go of that. Fly more comfortably, and allow not only fly the plane and realize that I was flying alone, the plane was flying alone anyway. That's what the plane wants to do, it wants to fly. But it brought me a lot of peace and comfort, and it built my relationship with the sky and planes in general. And that can be a metaphor for a lot of things.
That's a lovely, lovely story.
That's a great story. I agree.
And it goes back to last night when I said our job is to keep rebalancing,
right.
Letting go, not trying to control things. We do what we need to do and step back, and we let go of how it turns out. We have to, somewhere, have to have trust.
So here's a question. I was talking to another Dharma practitioner recently about this sort of thing, about like just trying to go throughout your day with this, you know, sense of open awareness and stuff. She was saying, yeah, you know, I was going through my day with open awareness, and it was great, and then like all these disasters happened, and you know, she forgot something, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm wondering, how do you differentiate whether or not you're fooling yourself? Because it seems like it would be possible to fool yourself and actually just do this conceptual version of being aware and stuff. So how do you catch yourself to make sure that's not happening?
Well, first of all, if things fall apart, it's not open awareness.
Right, that was
yeah.
Why she told me the story. She was like, oh, this is going great, and then everything just went to hell, so probably not.
And one of the ways is there's a flow to it. There's joy. There's also, when it happens, there's a sense of awe. I mean, it's... I remember one of the strongest experiences was years and years ago in Boston. And I was new to Dharma. And I had a lot of things I had to do. I was going to India, and it was... And so I had a whole list of stuff, and it started off, how am I going to get all this stuff done? And then when I came out of my apartment, I looked down the street, and there was a yellow Volkswagen Bug in front of this, what's it called, those houses with turrets, and I mean those old, in front of a yellow. And the whole, just seeing that was the dichotomy of it, the difference in ages, somehow that brought me in somehow. Just, and then I went on, I had to have my car fixed, and I did this, and I had to get train tickets, and everything just flowed into the next. I wasn't thinking about it. Nothing was forgotten, but I remember above everything I was doing, there was just this feeling of awe and joyful, and there was no doubt. Well, last time I looked, there were four people for interviews, and the order is on the table. And why don't we do a couple at lunch? So at 1 o'clock, my room is down at the end on the right. We'll do two people, and this evening we'll do two people.
Or three, because there's five now.
At lunch we'll do three people, and this evening we'll do two people. And then there's always tomorrow morning.
Yeah. And tomorrow morning too.
And tomorrow noon. So, Gewa Dei Nerdu Dak Dorje Sampa Drup Jorje Drowa Chichang Malu Pa Dei Salagopar Sho. We dedicate the merit of our endeavors to the enlightenment of all sentient beings. May we realize our true nature and act as a guide, naturally manifesting as a guide for all sentient beings. Have a wonderful lunch. I will see some of you at 1 and the rest of you at 2. Okay.